Welcome, everyone. We're happy to be in session here today, particularly in person. I'm joined by my colleagues, Judge Bonnie Bulla on my left, Judge Deborah Westbrook on my right. This is the second day of oral argument for Judge Westbrook. So she's still really excited about it. Not that we aren't, but she's really excited. Our first case today is Jordan Christos versus Sarah Tollickson. This is case number 84167-COA. It's the time set for the oral argument. For Mr. Christos, we have Mr. Page and Mr. Burke or Ms. Tollickson. And this is through the pro bono program, correct? All right, Mr. Page, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, I'll reserve 5 minutes, please.
Okay. All right, so it's set for the normal 15 minutes. And Mr. Page, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. We have a number of issues that are on appeal here today. We'll go ahead and start what we believe is the easiest issue, and that issue would be the whether the district court committed legal error in awarding the respondent, Sarah Tollickson, primary legal custody of the minor children. We believe that this issue should be relatively straightforward. The parties, when they filed their complaint and counterclaim, both alleged that they should receive joint legal custody. That remained the same until the middle of trial. Then during the middle of trial, mom said that she wants to have sole legal custody.
Wasn't that actually on the first day of trial during her testimony?
It may be the first day of trial, but after trial had commenced, maybe phrase it more accurately that way, then she asked for sole legal custody. Mr. Jordan, the appellant, had no notice that she was going to change her position up until that point. My client is entitled to advance notice if a person is going to change their position or ask for new relief. If she was going to ask for new relief, different relief, then she should have filed an amended complaint, asked leave to file, then filed the amended complaint. So my client would have had the opportunity to go ahead and ask for, you know, do different discovery, ask different questions, prepare in a different way. Because she brought that up during trial, he was deprived of his due process rights to have advance notice of the relief that was going to be requested by her. Right.
This trial went on through October and November, so six different days. Didn't he have time to respond over that more than a month time period?
Well, it'd be difficult because discovery's closed. Once discovery's closed, you don't have the ability to send out interrogatories, take depositions, send out subpoenas, request documents, do things like that. So because that didn't happen, he was entitled to rely on what her original position was in her original complaint.
Well, the district court didn't actually order sole legal custody, so is there really any prejudice?
Yes, there would be prejudice, I believe, because both in the complaint and the counterclaim, they had asked for joint physical custody. We're entitled to rely on those positions as they exist in the complaints and the counterclaim. And if you vary from that position, then you're unduly prejudiced because you're bringing up additional different requests for relief after the discovery process is closed. That would be a due process violation of my client's rights. And of course, having a relationship with your child or your children is a very fundamental precept under the United States Constitution when you're looking at the relationship between parent and child.
Okay. Mr. Page, let's go back to the joint legal custody issue for a moment. Or is your position that your client has no decision-making authority whatsoever with respect to some of the legal issues like medical, education, religious upbringing? Did the district court foreclose your client's ability to have any input into legal decision-making issues?
Yes, let me try and find a reference to the record here for you, Your Honor. He is allowed to have access to information, but day-to-day decision-making belongs to mom. And again, that would be a violation of his due process rights if he didn't have advance notice. That's what she intended to ask for, and she asked obviously for something significantly more, that he wouldn't even be entitled to day-to-day information.
Well, even if it's joint legal custody, that also means, though, that there can be a disparity on which parent may have responsibility in certain areas. In other words, you could have one parent being responsible for all the medical decisions. That does not necessarily mean you don't have joint legal custody, correct?
I would respectfully disagree with you on that. Okay. Because if you have joint legal custody, joint carries with it being equal. And equal means that you have to consult and cooperate regarding significant decisions regarding a child's health, education, welfare. That's traditionally what it's meant here in Clark County, at least. I don't have experience with the other counties, but generally that's what it means, that you have to consult and cooperate as part of joint legal custody, because mom has sole decision-making responsibility over the day-to-day decisions regarding the children. That is by definition not joint legal custody, because she's not required to consult and cooperate with dad regarding those issues.
Did the district court make a decision when your client has the parenting time on how that decision-making process was going to work?
No.
In the legal arena?
No, he has no right to decide what doctor the children see, whether they get vaccinated, what school they attend, what the curriculum is going to be at that school. He is excluded from all of those decision-making responsibilities by virtue of the judge's order.
Well, that's not what the court said, though, at the hearing. I mean, at the trial, the court made it clear that he would be involved in all major and moderate important decisions like that. It's not identified to the level of detail that you're talking about, but that's why the court said the hybrid joint legal custody. If it was sole legal custody, yes, you'd be correct, but that's not what actually happened.
It says here, I found it. It says, it is hereby ordered a judge and decreed that the parties shall have a hybrid joint legal custody with plaintiff mother making all day-to-day decisions. Plaintiff shall keep defendant informed of important information. So keeping him informed of important information, I think, is a distinction between decision-making rather than advising him, this is what I've done.
Right. One has to be informed to be able to be involved in the decision-making. So you're right. It's both parts. And you're also correct. The court improperly or incorrectly used the phrase the day-to-day decision-making. That's part of physical custody, not legal custody. And the judge seemed to get them mixed up.
The terms may be a little bit imprecise, but when we're talking about day-to-day, if the children are with her from day-to-day, the reasonable interpretation, I think, of the language, to the extent there's an ambiguity, would mean that if the child's going to see a doctor, going to see a dentist, going to see an eye doctor, she'd be making that decision of who, when, and where that would occur. And I think that would be a violation of his due process rights by not making him aware that that was going to be occurring until trial had commenced.
So you had mentioned that you were concerned because discovery is closed. Your client could not get discovery on the legal custody issue. What different discovery would you have done with respect to the legal custody as opposed to physical custody issue?
I wasn't trial counsel, but if this was my case to take to trial, I certainly would have sent out interrogatories and request for production of documents regarding the health care provider information for the children. If the children were involved in IEPs, individualized education programs, I would have been requesting that, and the children are special needs, or at least the oldest one is. So I'd be requesting that information to find out whether mom has actually been including dad in those decision-making responsibilities and whether dad had been participatory in those decision-making responsibilities. So, for example, if dad's been participatory in the children attending the physician or seeing the physician, then her seeking to cut him out of that role would be harmful to the rights that he's ordinarily enjoyed with these children since they were born. So those are the sorts of things I would have done.
In advance of trial. You would have
done
that
in advance. Oh,
absolutely,
in advance of trial, yes.
So then you could have argued the legal custody issue.
Yes, if she was asking for sole legal custody or some variation of that, then I would have certainly attacked that issue to be able to obtain information that would prevent her from meeting the standard of proof, which I believe is the preponderance of the evidence, that she should prevail on her position. And by my client being surprised with this during trial, he was foreclosed with that opportunity, which I think is very unfair and is a violation of his due process rights.
Okay. Well, just to summarize this so we can move on, at the trial, the district court actually said that it wanted Mr. Christos to be involved in the major and moderate health, education, and religious decisions. The court did not want the parties communicating unduly, which seems to be to explain the not the day-to-day activities. But I go back to my point. Day-to-day is a physical custody decision from Rivero. The rest of it is legal custody. So I'm not sure if you're talking about the physical custody or the legal custody of this argument.
I'm referring to legal custody, and I'm referring to legal custody as it relates to things like health, education, and welfare. And those, so things that have to do with your educational decisions for your children, for your medical decisions for your children, those things, that falls under the umbrella of legal custody. And by virtue of the judge's order and my reading of the decree, he is excluded from that decision-making responsibility. His ability to participate is apparent, which he should have received advance notice of.
Okay. Do you think the domestic violence findings have anything to do with this?
No, I don't believe so. And this would be outside the scope of the pleadings. But there are people in prison who have joint legal custody.
Right. But when there's domestic violence, sometimes it's best for people not to be talking to each other any more than they have to.
We tend to address that in the domestic relations area by having parenting apps like Talking Parents or Our Family Wizard, or just simple text messages wherein if you're going to communicate, you're going to communicate about the children only, you're going to communicate in a respectful way, and you're going to limit your communications to the health and welfare of the children.
Okay. All right. Those are all good points. It's at 5 minutes, but I think you should at least introduce the rest of your topic. Sorry.
Thank you. I didn't anticipate this level of questioning, but thank you for having the questions. The other issue that we think is fairly important, and there's a couple more here, it has to do with the court's consideration of the CPS report and the court's consideration of the no contest plea that my client made. There are repeated references to the CPS case that was made that I believe was prejudicial to the court making the findings that it did in awarding my...
Was there any objection below?
Yes, there was an objection below, and I did reference that in my brief that at trial, the trial counsel did object to the CPS report being considered by the court. And it's obviously a hearsay document. The caseworker did not come in to lay a foundation for the report to explain the who, what, why, when, and where she made the determinations or wrote down what
she did. Why is that report not in the record?
Those things are usually left-hand side filed. They don't really become in as exhibits. They become the court's exhibits rather than part of the trial exhibit.
What about all the pretrial hearings? I mean, something that's confusing about this order is 24 times in the order it says, and as previously found, but there's no description as to what hearing that refers to or what the findings were. Is this something that came up in the earlier hearings and that's why it was referenced during the trial?
The CPS report did come into play as to the earlier interim hearings. And often we have documents that are attached as exhibits for interim hearings for which the court may go ahead and make interim orders. But when we come to trial and we're going to make final orders, we should be doing the appropriate thing if we're going to admit a hearsay document, rely upon that for final rulings, that we go ahead and have the person come in and lay a foundation.
Is there any specific part of this document that's not in the record that you can identify that was prejudicial, that it was presented, that the court considered?
Again, since it was left-hand side filed, I don't have the same access to the record as the judge did. But the fact that the caseworker found a substantiation of abuse or neglect, I think is prejudicial because that caseworker didn't come in to explain why she came to the conclusion that she did. And we can't unring a bell. The judge, once he reads that or considers that without having the caseworker come in to evaluate their credibility or their demeanor, is problematic. And
I think the judge at one point said the allegations were not sufficient. But again, there's not specificity as to exactly what he's referring to. And that's why we need the record so we can evaluate this.
I would agree with you that we should have the CPS record. Unfortunately, we cannot get that CPS record once it's part of the left-hand side file of the court. There are child custody reports. There are psychological reports that we never get to see that they're never part of the record because of their highly sensitive nature. But in all of those cases, we do have the author of the report come in and at least explain why they did what they did, which didn't occur.
Hey, I made that very point in the Myers v. Haskins opinion that came out last June.
We believe under these circumstances, the judge taking that all in consideration, impermissibly tainted the proceedings that would warrant a new trial. Then we also have, I'm sorry.
I was getting, you're running out of time.
Yes, I am. And I want to
get a little bit. I just want to make sure you at least hit the highlights of all of your arguments.
Thank you. The and no contest plea that my, I'm sorry.
And I won't talk anymore.
Okay. The no contest plea, because that was considered, and it's here in the transcript, I specifically laid this out, at Appellant Appendix 590, the judge indicated that he was cognizant of the no contest plea, and he doesn't have to be constrained by what the ultimate rulings were because he was charged with it. Again, when we're coming to something where you talk about there's a number of TPO hearings, there's a number of arrests, there's a no contest plea. When a court is taking that into consideration, when there has been no finding of guilt or violation of a TPO or things of that nature, then again, it impermissibly taints the whole process by saying, I'm aware of this, I can take all these things into consideration. Anyone can be arrested for anything. That doesn't mean they're guilty. And the same is true for no contest pleas. That's why we have this statute saying we can't consider it. Yet they went ahead and considered that. And it comes to a situation where you can't unring a bell. And that is unduly prejudicial to my client and harmed him. And with that, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, the time's technically up. But unless counsel, my colleagues object, I would suggest adding two more minutes. Does that sound all right? All right, two minutes for rebuttal when we get to that. All right, you may proceed here. Mr. Burke, we covered a lot of points. We interrupted Mr. Page a lot. I'll try to refrain from that, but nonetheless, there were some unusual things that happened in the way this trial proceeded, and so we'll have to talk about it a little more, but go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court, Christopher Burke for the respondent. I don't expect to take 15 minutes, so the 2 minutes that Mr. Page needs or whatever the court wants to give him is okay
him,
on the
Senate. You want to give him part of your time?
I'm not opposed to that.
Okay.
In terms of the legal custody, on page 29 of my brief, I put in at least three quotes from the court. The dad has joint legal custody for the purpose of assessing school and medical records and speaking to specialists and all, but I don't want these parties to be involved in standard day-to-day decisions. The court also said, mom is awarded primary physical custody and again, joint legal custody is a hybrid. Dad is awarded joint legal custody to assess schooling and medical records and talk to people. And then again, on page 29, I don't want these parties communicating unduly, but if it's any major health, education, or religious decision, or even a moderate one, she will have to consult dad on the parenting app. So the court did consider and allow joint legal custody to Mr. Christos.
So counsel, that language that you just read, if it's any major health, education, or religious decision, or even a moderate one, she will have to consult dad on a parenting app. That didn't find its way into the court's written order, did it?
No, it did not.
Is there a reason for that?
Like Mr. Page, I wasn't trial counsel. I just
so do you do you see the written order as containing that same permission to mm-hmm. that would allow dad to have input in major health, education, or religious decisions?
Not to that extent, but I think if the dad requested it and she denied it, they'd come back to the record to show that it was allowed, or perhaps an amended judgment should be entered.
So then if mom has day-to-day decision making and then these items that I just read didn't make their way into the order, does that mean that essentially mom does have primary or even sole legal custody?
I wouldn't consider it that way.
Well, couldn't it be considered? The court said it at the hearing, so that's what it wanted to do, what it intended. And anywhere there's an ambiguity in the order, then we can look at what happened at the hearing and to help interpret what the order means.
Well, yeah, exactly. And as
and
I
the
said,
order says joint, it says joint legal, not sole legal. And the argument, of course, on the other side, it's essentially a sole legal order. So if we're going to interpret it as a joint legal, which you are saying, then we probably should say that's what the court really meant.
Exactly. There was a dispute. Go back before the court and pull out what the court actually said. But it's in the record. It may not be in the order, but it's in the record for clarification. And there's
Does your client have any objection to consulting through the app with Mr. Christos on these issues?
Of course not.
What does she not want to do? I mean, is it the second part where the court said not to have unduly too many communications? Is that related to physical custody rather than legal custody?
It has to do with her fear of him and him weaponizing support for intimacy, perhaps. And so the court didn't want to put her in the position of having to deal with him one-on-one physically in close contact, where she didn't want to have that situation based on the past.
All right. Well, let's just take this as a regular example. It's a weekend and Mr. Christos has the children. Is there going to be any communication with each other about what goes on during his time with the children?
I couldn't tell you.
I mean, under physical custody, isn't that what the Supreme Court intended in the Rivero case, that you have to have communication on the legal custody issues? On the physical custody issues, it's not required because the parent that is exercising their parenting time makes the day-to-day decisions. And the court was just mistaken when it said that she makes the day-to-day decisions.
What I think the court meant is she has the kids most of the time, so she's going to be making those decisions. And if it goes beyond something such as religious or schooling.
But the court did not mean for Mr. Christos to be calling her on the weekend to say, I want to put the kids to bed at 7 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock.
Correct.
And that sort of thing's not required.
Correct.
And even though that's a day-to-day decision.
Correct.
Okay. So in interpreting that order, once again, if we look at the totality of what the court was saying, what it meant was, when the person is exercising their parenting time, that parent makes the decisions. When it's the bigger decisions, they have to communicate with each other.
That's how I would read it, yes.
But I suppose the concern is that if it's still on the weekend and one of the children breaks an arm and has to go to the hospital and Mr. Christos is in control of that particular aspect, gets the child to the hospital and someone questions who has the decision-making power, the court order that we have in the record isn't going to be very helpful in that regard, is it?
Obviously, the order could have been a lot more specific, but it can't cover everything. And in reading through this transcript, I believe both parties know what the court meant.
But do you think a third party would?
Not necessarily. So are you leaning towards a remand to clarify the order?
Well, the decision? That remains to be seen, counsel.
But does he have day-to-day authority on his own days?
He has day-to-day authority on the regular stuff. What are we going to go eat? Are we going to go see a movie? Those kinds of things.
Okay, what would he not have day-to-day authority of on the weekends?
Well, perhaps to say, I'm taking you to this church.
Anything else?
I think he would have to consult her on anything, again, major. Health issues, schooling issues, church issues.
Does she have to consult him on issues of that nature as well?
Yes, that's what it says on page 29. Anything major. So just to follow up.
I can't resist. Mr. Page was insisting these are constitutional violations.
I don't see them as such. I think the fact that it was brought up on the first day, he gave them all the time they needed to question the way they wanted. There was enough in the record if they wanted to use that to trip her up or have this done a different way. But they at least had the time, and it happened over months, this trial, and they could have put together the best questions possible. And so I don't see that as a last minute thing. And I'd go so far as to say perhaps even if both wanted joint, if the facts came out, court, a judge could sua sponte, say, listen, based on what I've heard, I'm going to do this, or based upon the evidence. So I don't think it's something that should trip up this decision and send it back down to for a do-over, which leads into the main point here. The position of the appellant is, if the court had only forgotten about this, or ignored that, or didn't consider this fully, or didn't really look too deeply into this, then it wouldn't have came to this decision. But this is a cumulative case effect. The judge looked at everything and said, he shouldn't have the custody, she should. He went through the 12 factors. Six of them went her way, six of them were neutral. He went through the alleged knife incident. He waited a year to bring it up. He went through the fact that dad left a 3 and a 5-year-old alone, one of them special needs. The court noted that he weaponizes support. So based on everything that was before the court made a decision any reasonable judge would make sitting in that situation. And I would ask the court to affirm.
Well, do you know what the judge meant when the order uses the phrase, the court incorporates prior findings and further finds? So, as I mentioned, that's in there 24 times, but the prior findings are never identified.
To me, it was that what went on in his transcript that I pointed out over and over again, his findings in his decision that he orally put on the record. If it went back before that, I couldn't tell you.
Well, Mr. Page mentioned, for example, the CPS report would have been on the left-hand side of the file, so that's why it's not in the record. I mean, is that something that would have been used at a prior hearing, and that's why it was there on the left side? I mean, is that something the court's incorporating? I mean, I don't know what it means by this statement.
I think amongst all of us, probably Mr. Page is the only family law expert here, so he'd have to answer that. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, what about the domestic violence? I mean, there were two incidents that the court made specific findings on that the domestic violence happened. How does that then affect the rest of the decisions regarding physical and legal custody? And because the court made these specific findings based upon your client's testimony that domestic violence happened, does it even matter that there was a nolo contendere plea to one of those and the court also referenced that?
The court found her credible, obviously. And so, again, it goes back to the cumulative case. What they want is to say, well, he pleaded nolo contendere, so don't even consider it. Or we didn't have an expert here, so don't consider that. Or there's really not enough evidence to consider this. But when you put it all together, it shows a pattern. And the judge didn't like the pattern it showed. And therefore, he awarded her what he awarded her. And again, I would ask the court to affirm.
Do you agree that we send it back on the child support to correct the amount? Because it looks like two numbers were transposed, 1985 versus 1895.
Yeah, I hate to see a remand for something that simple, but it makes a difference to the parties, and that's fine. We don't oppose that.
Wow. Seems like counsel should have stipulated long ago in the district court to fix that.
Yeah.
Now there's going to be a problem of overpayment.
And the last thing I would just say, the court can affirm for failure to have a complete record by the appellant. And if the court finds that there's anything missing, that's a basis to affirm the decision. If there's nothing else, then thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Burt. All right, Mr. Page, you have 2 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you. Very, very briefly. The on page 29 of the reply brief, so the day-to-day decisions with the school with autism schooling doctors in Dell Points being made by mom. Okay. To circle back to the legal custody provisions, prior to trial starting, dad was on the impression or was reasonably taught at the conclusion that joint legal custody in play. This, when mom changed her position and the judge's words here changed that from joint legal custody to something different, where they do not have equal access or equal decision-making responsibility for the children. So it would be a violation of his due process rights, obviously, to not have advance notice that he was going to be cut out of the decision-making process for doctors and dentists and things like that. But what we did want to go, try and go over here for a little bit was the judge's findings as it relates to custody under 0035. We do things, have things here that we think that the CPS records and the no contest plea, which were brought into evidence, unduly influenced the court's decision. For example, whether there's been a parental abuse or neglect of a child, the court stated, yes, dad absolutely loves his children very much. He doesn't strike them, doesn't abuse them per se, and he cares for them more than adequately. That contradicts his conclusion that he has abused the children and therefore mom should have custody. So the findings the judge has is not supported by the record.
What was there testimony about the neglect apart from what may or may not have been in the CPS records? Did the parties speak to that issue?
The parties did testify to that issue. The judges
asked, so why couldn't the judge have relied on the parties' testimony about whether or not the children were being neglected?
I believe by him stating that dad doesn't abuse the children per se, he cares for them more than adequately, contradicts his finding that is contained in the decree that he has in fact abused or neglected these children. And therefore, that would be a ground for reversing his decision because it's just simply contradicted by his own words. Then also here, where they find where the finds that Sarah is more than adequate and my client's adequate, yet finds in favor of her. In favor of her, well, if they're both adequate, then there shouldn't be a problem. There should, that's a reason for joint physical custody, not for a reason for giving mom, primary custody because she's more adequate. Similarly, for the idea that there's been, domestic violence committed by my client, the judge, I believe, relied on the fact that there is a no contest plea, as part of his conclusion for finding that dad has committed an act of violence by clear and convincing evidence. And I believe that the record can be such that this should be sent back so we can get clarification on the court's decision. It may be a short hearing to determine whether he is taking that in consideration or not, but at least should be clarified so my client knows that the statute has been properly applied and the judge has made the decisions that he has for the right proper application of the facts to the law. And my looks like my time is up.
Okay, that's including the extra time given to you by Mr. Burke.
Okay. Then right. Thank you for your time, Your Honor. I appreciate you taking this matter into consideration. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Page. Good job. Thank you, Mr. Burke. Appreciate also, the court really appreciates taking the case pro bono.
Thank you.
And hopefully you'll do another one, family law or not.
Yeah, I've had about five or six.
Family law or just in general?
They're all family law. But I always take them as the appellee or respondent. I don't want to figure it out.
Well, we appreciate the work that you do. Thank you.
Thank you both so much.
All right, we'll be in the recess for a little bit. The next matter is not set until 3:00.